Blog Talk Radio.
All opinions, comments, and representations made by the hosts of Brilliant Ideas Radio and their guests are strictly for entertainment purposes. Well, at least that's what we think we're doing. Entertaining you. Welcome to Brilliant Ideas Radio. Brilliant Ideas Radio keeps you informed about all the awesome products and people in the food industry. Brilliant Ideas Radio is about food, music, and most importantly, having fun with your friends. And now, here is the man with the master plan, Brilliant Ideas. So join the fun and call the studio number at 714-242-5272. Once again, the studio number is 714-242-5272.
Good morning, everybody out there in Blog Talk Radio land. This is the Brilliant Ideas Radio Show, and this, of course, is Brilliant Ideas coming to you today from another mobile location this morning. I thought it was apropos that we decided to go ahead and go to the Fresh and Easy parking lot in Fallbrook, California. And I'm sitting in the Fresh and Easy parking lot, and I'm surrounded by a mecca of food. We got the KFC, we've got a Subway, we've got a DiGiorno Pizzeria. Across the street is an Albertsons. We've got the Green Burrito and a Carl's Jr. and a Taco Bell. So we're surrounded by food. I thought it would be apropos to have the show here in the Fresh and Easy, or as I like to say, the Fresh and Sleazy parking lot. And so we're surrounded for food for this Saturday morning food show. And if everything's working okay, hopefully you'll be able to hear me. You may hear an occasional truck going by, cars going by, homeless people pounding on the truck. Who knows who may come by here. You may hear music playing, crowd noises, but we're going to try to do this from the Fresh and Easy parking lot and on with the show. And joining us this morning is our food news Jersey style girl, Laurie. If everything is working right, Laurie, good morning. Welcome to the show.
Hello. Hello. Good morning.
How are you this morning?
Oh, I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm all right. Can you hear me okay out here in the parking lot?
I can. How am I coming in okay?
You're coming in loud and clear. I thought it's pretty appropriate. I'm surrounded by all this food. So what the heck?
And homeless people.
I know, exactly. And plus there's a CVS, an AutoZone, a Payless shoe store if I want to get some shoes, a Chase Bank. So lots of things going on here. Oh, and there's a Radio Shack. Anyway, so I thought I'd have the show here actually trying to find a signal. I look like a storm chaser going across the highway looking for a place where our mobile internet connection would work. And it was like I was watching the signal box on the computer, and every time I come to a place where I say, oh, I've got three bars, maybe I can do the show here. And then when I pull over to do the show, it would drop down to two bars. So right now we've got two bars, and I hope that it's working. So anyway, what's going on in the food news world, Lori?
Oh, some fun things. I know I have only like a few minutes to read a story or two because then our beautiful Katarina's coming on. So
yeah.
Should I make it like a quickie one, or do I have, like, how much time do I have?
Well, right now, she's coming on in a few minutes, and I think A.A. Ron is going to be calling in too. But go with whatever you got, and we'll just let them sit in the wings and wait.
Oh, good. Okay. Here's a cute one I found. Grown-ups loving Lucky Charms. And we know how we love our Lucky Charms.
Yes, I love Lucky Charms. They're magically delicious.
Yes, they are. It says, General Mills has found success with its breakfast products for adults, particularly grown-up worthy foods such as the Yoplait Greek 100-calorie yogurt, we know that, And the Natural Valley protein bars, I love them. And both among the company's fastest growing sellers over the last year, another breakfast product that adults are eating with fervor. How do you say that? Fervor.
Fervor?
Fervor.
You're asking me? You're the one that has the paper in front of you. Was it F-E-R-V-O-R?
I was, you know what, because I kind of was reading ahead of myself. Like I started reading, and I'm like, it says Lucky Charms. Earlier this week, General Mills said the colorful marshmallow heavy cereal has been one of the strongest contributions to the U.S. sales growth. And
really?
It's not easy. Yeah. Oh, I'm going to read the top 10 cereals, too, if you can't guess them. I'll have you try to guess them. But it says here, it's not easy to spur interest in a brand that dates back to 1964, but Marion Jepson, a spokeswoman for General Mills, pointed to the success of an advertising and marketing campaign for Lucky Charms that targets the adults. It says here, Lucky Charms were up double digits through the remainder of the fiscal year, and the company claims more than 40% of Lucky Charms eaters are the adults. And then, the top 10 best-selling food brands in the U.S. You want to try to start
before, yeah, before you go to that, I am really surprised that people are eating Lucky Charms. That's got to probably be one of the most unhealthy cereals out there.
I couldn't believe it. I know. I mean, I don't buy them for that reason. They are fun, but I don't buy them for that reason.
Oh, well, always after me, Lucky Charms. So you want me to try to guess the top 10 cereals, huh?
Yeah, give it a shot.
All right. Well, I have to ask, is Captain Crunch on the list?
Did you say Captain Kirk or Captain Crunch?
No, not Kirk. I know we're talking, you know, boldly going where no man has been before with arugula, but no, Captain Crunch.
You just said Captain Kirk. You did not say Captain Crunch.
Is Captain Crunch on the list?
That's a good question. No.
Really? After all that? No. All right, wait a minute.
I know.
Let me think. Okay, wait. I know. How about Frosted Flakes?
Yes, they're there, number 6.
Hey, there, that's great. Okay, let's see.
Oh,
wow.
What do you think number 1?
Raisin Bran.
You can guess number 1. No. That's what I would think, but no. Cheerios.
All right, well, Cheerios. Why didn't I? Yeah, Beerios and Cheerios. I should have known that.
Yes, boring. And then Post was number 2, boring. Kellogg's Special K. You know what's number 4? I can't even. I'm sorry. I better not say this on the air. They'll get mad at me. But Kashi.
Really? And who would get mad at you?
People of Kashi.
Well, you don't like Kashi cereal?
No, I think it's just, no, not at all.
Well, I don't either, but they're not one of our sponsors and probably never will be, so who cares? They won't be now.
No, I know. And then you've got the Quaker Instant Oatmeal.
Yeah.
You've got Cinnamon Toast Crunch. Quaker
Oats. Yeah.
Kellogg's Mini Wheats. And then Lucky Charms was number 10.
Wow. Well,
that's
there you go.
Didn't make the list.
I learn something every day. Hey, we've got Katarina calling in, as we call her, Kitty Cat. So let's plug her in here. Let's see here. Press this button, brilliant. And let's see. 1, 2, 3. Good morning, Katarina. Welcome to the show.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Are you enjoying our cereal conversation?
Well, I've already had mine. I'm an oatmeal kind of girl. So when you said Captain Crunch, I think that was the one that I left behind when I was 12. Do adults actually still eat that?
Why do you think I brought it up?
Well, I know I enjoyed it, but, you know, as we get older, we've got to start thinking about longevity, and we enter the next half of our lives, and we've got to start thinking about, you know, exercising more, you know, doing all of that crazy stuff. So I'm hearing some...
Yeah, we're getting feedback. Hey, Laurie, are you on speaker? Okay.
And for some reason, I'm hearing a little thing kind of coming in saying mute all the time. So I don't know if that's I'll let you know when it happens again. But it happened a few. Maybe someone's trying to shut me up before I even get going. Anyway.
Well, welcome, hey, Katarina. Welcome
Thank
to
you.
The Green Ideas Radio Show.
So we got started with cereals this morning, and I'm just here to kind of partake in the Saturday morning fun as kind of a little side host, I guess. Maybe
yes,
just to mention a little bit of the food show that I attended last week. What a show! Have you ever been to the food show in New York ever, one in San Francisco?
I've never had the pleasure of doing such, no.
I'm telling
you. Tell us
you,
all
it's,
about
it's
it.
It's something. He sounds so excited. it's a fascinating show. I mean, there's a lot of the same old. Every single year you see the same companies over and over again, and the ones that we find, you know, in lots of mainstream stores and specialty stores. But this year I was asked to cover the event as press, which I thought was fascinating and a great opportunity for me to be able to do that. And I really wanted to do that because this is the first time that the show was back in New York at the Javits Center, where it's been historically, but the last 2 years it was in D.C. because they were having some major renovations done. So I thought it would be really great to see a lot of these companies kind of on their home turf. And they, for the first time ever, they actually had a section for just New York businesses, which was really interesting to, you know, really get to know a lot of these, you know, businesses that have been around for hundreds of years, you know, that we, you know, read about and taste some of the products that we hear about on TV and very rarely have a chance to do because they manufacture locally in small batches, and that's pretty much it. They don't ship.
Katarina, I have to interrupt you for a second. You may have missed our intro.
Yeah.
But I'm in a parking lot of a Fresh and Easy, and there's a homeless man heading towards my vehicle looking for money.
Yeah.
So if I disappear for a moment.
Yes.
If you guys hear something in the background where I'm negotiating with a homeless man, don't mind me. Just
feed the poor man, will you? For God's sake,
yeah, right?
Go buy him a burger or something.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
So anyway, a couple of the, you know, I kind of went there to, you know, not only write about just, I guess, the general show and some interesting, you know, products that that were there. But I wanted to highlight specifically, I think the new trend in the industry these days is really the focus on organic and non-GMO. And that's really kind of what's going on and where it's heading. So you find more and more businesses these days that started out as a wholesome product, and then eventually they evolved into an organic product, and now they're taking it a step further into more of a fair trade type of product. Historically, you saw it with coffees. Now you see it more and more with chocolate, now you're seeing it with honey. And so I'm going to highlight a couple of products in the article that, you know, again, we're, I think, evolving into the types of businesses that most consumers are looking for these days. And if it really wasn't the trend, you know, companies like Whole Foods and Green Markets and Fresh Farms and even farmers markets wouldn't be popular these days. So you know, for people who kind of want to poo-poo that idea and poo-poo that trend and say, oh, well, you know, it's just one of those things that exists. And, you know, if we can afford to buy it, we buy it. If we don't, we buy mainstream stuff. But, you know, I think the trend is heading in that way. And I'll tell you another reason why I believe that it's heading in that way. There's a guy in Vermont. His name is Mateo Keeler. And he just built this 22,000 square foot underground cave. And when I read
that.
About that, I thought of you. I thought of you.
Sounds like something I would do, doesn't it?
And you know what this guy is doing? For somebody to make that kind of investment, you know, he's obviously either a pioneer or a trendsetter, or he's following a trend that he's picked up on. And what this guy is doing, or crazy, or some kind of bomb shelter that we all need to pay a little bit more attention to. But anyway, he is taking cheese from local farmers who are, you know, producing mostly fresh cheeses right now and who want to evolve into producing more aged cheeses, and he's aging it for them. So now you're seeing this, symbiotic relationship between the producers and now these facilities that are popping up that are allowing them to kind of advance and produce their products. So that's going to create, you know, lots more interesting products within each of the communities. And he's also going to be expanding into other things like hams.
Like
Parma hams and things like that.
Really?
So, you know, and aging, yeah. So really interesting trends happening. And really what that's telling me is that the push these days is going back to the community in terms of production. And this idea that, you know, everybody tosses around the words green and sustainable. And recently I had, you know, one of the people that I'm friends with on Facebook asked me, you know, what's the meaning of sustainability? Because everybody kind of tosses it around like, you know, it's just one of those things that everybody, it's just one of those PR things and politically correct. And this is the way we need to talk. But do we really walk the walk? And I believe from what I've seen that it's really starting to happen. And you've got these really great minds who are looking at the life of and survival of farmers who are doing the more conventional things but also want to start doing a lot of the more unconventional things. And when this guy, how did you hear about him? Did you just
I read it on the internet. Came across the story on the internet. And by the way, before we go too far with this riveting radio, the phones are lighting up like crazy. Literally, I mean, I got more callers calling in than I know what to do with here, and I don't know if they want to. I know one of them. Speaking of symbiotic relationships, I like that, by the way. I have no idea what it means, but I like when you said that. Speaking of symbiotic relationships,
so that's why you have me.
I have Aaron calling in. I believe he's one of the numbers here, so let's get him on here so we can have this a whole full house. Good morning, Aaron. You there?
What up?
Hey, do you know what a symbiotic relationship is?
I do.
You do? What is it?
Yeah, it's where one organism attaches to another organism and uses that organism as a host.
There you go. And that's what you're doing to me.
And I just attach to the host.
It's a mutually beneficial relationship. So,
There you go. I got another caller. Let's see who this is. I have no clue who this is. Hold on a second. Good morning. This is Green Ideas Radio, 410 number. Who's calling in?
Hey, it's Chad Wells.
Hey, Chad Wells, I thought that might be you. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, sir.
Well,
now, there's a fascinating man for you.
Another fascinating man. We're sitting here talking about symbiotic relationships and Parma hams and bomb shelters, and welcome to the show.
Thanks. Yeah, that's all the fun stuff in life, right?
Exactly. So, Katerina, you got a full house of people here listening to you. So, where were you? Last time I remember, you were in the bomb shelter, and you're talking about the cheese, the Parma ham. So, where do we go from there?
Well, no, I mean, and I'm so glad Chad's on board, because we recently did a story on Chad, and he's got so much to say about the issue of sustainability in the food system, and you know, he can contribute so much information from his own personal experience through life as a chef, and you know, and just as a kid growing up, and he's had you know, great influences from others who you know, again, saw the importance of it and weren't necessarily influenced by society as kind of the right thing to do, but more of on a personal level is the right thing to do. And I think those are the people that we really need to kind of follow, and I really believe that Chad is one of them, because he's got a lot to say from what he's learned. And I know that that's the way he lives his life, so I'm going to turn it over to him.
Yeah, I was going to say, Chad, that's your cue, and that's what we call a segue in radio, that you're supposed to now introduce yourself, tell us who you are, what you do. It's like, what's my line? And then
So basically, my name is Chad Wells. I'm an executive chef and currently in Annapolis. About to be, I'm here for another week, and then I'm going to another familiar place next week, which that's kind of news to everybody at this point. But as of I'll be at Rockfish in Annapolis until Thursday, and then I'm taking a couple days, and then going somewhere.
Where are you going?
I'm not going to say.
Can you say?
But I will say, if you follow me on Twitter or anything like that,
you'll know. Tell me privately later.
You'll know for sure. You'll know for sure.
Okay.
But touching on a couple things that, you know, I had heard listening earlier. You know, one of the things, you know, you said you didn't want to mention Kashi. Well, I do. They're frauds and they're liars, and they're trying to capitalize. They're trying to capitalize on you know, anytime that we see a trend in the food world, especially with things like being natural and sustainable and things like that, we're going to see people that are trying to capitalize off of this. And it's fraudulent, and it's similar to what a prime example. It's similar to what the tobacco industry was doing. They basically are targeting poor people. They're targeting children, and they turn around and they try to push this product on you for product. And they always are going to look for a new way to do it to have an edge over the competition, to sell a low-cost product in turn to make more profits. And what companies like Kashi do is they turn around and they say, all right, what's in the market now? All right, all natural. All natural doesn't mean that it's grown from a natural source, that it's naturally
right.
grown. All natural, what it means
right.
is that there's no preservatives, no artificial colors in it.
Right.
At the end of the
right.
day, you know, most Kashi products are made from genetically modified soy. So
right.
there's nothing natural about that at all. It's very misleading. And you know, they've kind of, the food system as a whole has kind of created an outlet for other companies and other food processors to be able to do this. And it, in turn, at the end of the day, it actually hurts local economies. It hurts farmers, and it hurts business as a whole.
Well, Chad, hold on a second. Hey, Aaron, you still there with me?
I am.
Take out the list and mark Kashi off as one of our possible sponsors later.
Yeah, I've already marked them off. But hey, since we're talking about all natural, do you know what all natural raspberry flavor comes from?
Where?
Probably paint. Would
no.
be my guess. I have no idea. But it's not good.
Beaver paint.
That's
beaver
right.
Paint.
It's beaver paint.
And it's counted as all natural because it comes from a natural beaver taint. But yeah, all natural raspberry flavor.
Yeah, it's unbelievable.
Wait a minute, whoa. Are you serious?
Yes. You didn't know that?
Yes, that's serious. Yeah.
No, oh my God.
I don't know what symbiotic relationship means. So how the heck would I know that? For real.
It's true.
Yeah.
It comes
all
from
that. But
from,
the thing is,
from,
the great thing
from
about
their poop.
Is, yeah, the things that these companies throw out, this all-natural stuff, it doesn't, like Chad was saying, it doesn't necessarily mean that this thing was grown and it came naturally from a raspberry and it was squeezed and you got their natural raspberry flavor. No, it's just a natural thing that they found that tastes like raspberry, but it squeezed beaver taint into your candy.
Hey, Laurie.
Yeah, and that's the type of stuff that people are trying to eat.
Hey, news girl, you still there?
I'm still here.
We need you to do a research on that for next week. I want you to find out more about beaver tape and how it's
and
how
scratch
it's
off anything with raspberry flavoring. Well, you know, I was so impressed with Chad because he's well, you have to tell us a little bit about the snakehead competition last week. You know, what were the totals that came in?
I haven't seen the final numbers from the spreadsheet. It was definitely good.
Mm-hmm.
I think we had about, in total, it was probably between 1,200 and 1,300 pounds that
Holy
were caught.
Cow.
Mm-hmm. You know, about 250 people got introduced to eating snakehead for the first time, and that's always
mm-hmm.
a good thing. And then, you know, some returning people. One thing that we've seen from the tournament over the past, you know, this was the third one we did, and one thing that we've seen that has been really, really positive, and you could take it two ways. We were, the first year, we donated all the fish that were caught. Most people donated them. They didn't want to mess with it. This year, we got virtually no donations because people wanted to take them home and clean them and eat them themselves,
mm-hmm.
which is
mm-hmm.
awesome to see. I mean, that's
good.
You know, there's so many different goals and so many different values that are that we push with that tournament that it's working. You know, and it's doing such a great thing for the community, and people love it.
For the listeners who may not be familiar with the snakehead fish, what exactly is that?
Basically, it is the demon fish from Asia that everyone's afraid of in this area. What it did is it first surfaced in, I think it was 2003. They found one in a pond. Officials
were
just in Crofton,
mm-hmm.
Maryland, which is a small suburb of D.C. The officials were so frightened that they shocked and poisoned the entire pond to try to make sure there was no more. They're that threatening with how fast they expand and how fast they reproduce. We flash forward a few years, they're everywhere. This is basically an Asian fish. It's an alpha predator. They have no, you know, they're at the top of the food chain. They don't have any predators at all in this region. You know, they've been found, they breed so rapidly that what they can do is they overtake all the spawning grounds for other fish in this ecosystem, and they're just all in all threatening to the ecology of the Chesapeake Bay and the Chesapeake Bay's tributaries. So the Potomac River region now has become so overrun with them that it's kind of yet to be seen what they're actually going to be doing in the near future. But the fact is, you know, the first year we do the tournament, we get 500 pounds, and now we're at 1,300 pounds. Of a couple people fishing, you know, it goes to show how rapidly they produce. But they breed really fast, nasty teeth. They breed multiple times a year. They're monogamous fish, so what that means is that they protect their young. So when you have a fish that protects their young, their survival rate is much, much higher than the other natural fish from this region. And, you know, there's all the horror stories about how they can walk on land. They can be out of water for 36 hours. All of those things have some validity to them, but the biggest concern about them is their actual threat to the environment itself.
Well, I have to ask, how do you catch a snake fish?
Any way you want, really. Maryland has done a really, really great job with promoting the sport fishery of them. You know, a lot of people like to go run topwater lures. Pretty much anything that a bass will hit, these things will hit as well. And then the biggest thing right now that people are doing for them is fishing with bow and arrow. And going out at night, mainly, and hitting the low tides at night and shooting them.
Wow.
Speaking of which, why don't you chat a little bit about the episode that you filmed with Andrew Zimmern? Bow fishing.
Yeah, that was a pretty awesome experience. Some friends of mine, Whack Factor Outdoors, they're the people that that put on the tournament that I assist with the organization and doing a lot of stuff with them. Basically, I had done some events with Andrew Zimmern, and we started talking about doing it. He was very interested in it, and then the producer was very interested in it. So what we decided to do, as opposed to doing the episode and doing it in restaurants, we decided to get the Whack Factor Outdoors guys, their boat, the Snakehead Slayer. Those guys took him out, taught him how to shoot snakeheads, what we shot, we filleted it right on the boat. We took a propane grill on the boat, and we cooked up some sandwiches right on the boat. So it was a pretty cool experience. He's a really, really, really good person to work with, and he's got such a great message that I think that sometimes, you know, people see, you know, the quirky, fun Andrew Zimmern, but they don't they don't really look at the deeper meaning to what he's doing, which is he's really, really trying to put a giant wrench in the gear of the modern food system by promoting these alternative food sources that people overlook frequently. And, you know, I think that is his goal, and he's showing how they do it all over the world and how people live a very happy and healthy lives eating things that are not pushed on them by the corporate food world.
Now, what's a snakehead fish taste like?
I think your best description is insanely
chicken.
Mild. Yeah, that's what a lot of people say, but I think that's kind of the go-to. But it's a very, very mild fish. If you were to look at the fillet, when you first see the fillet, you would just say, "Oh, what is this? This looks like a big tilapia, or something along those lines."
No, it does not. Don't say that. No,
I think fillet itself has very, very similar characteristics. I don't think it really tastes like it. I think it, as far as the flavor profile, it's very mild and delicate. It almost has like a, if you've ever eaten a monkfish and it's got that mild flavor.
Right.
Exactly.
Kind of got that,
yes.
That going on with it. And then it's texturally, it's great. I mean, it's very, very firm. But typically when you have those really firm ocean fish, the deep water ocean fish, you get a little bit more of a fishy taste out of it. This, you don't get, you don't really get that fishy taste. So texturally, you know, it'll still flake like a fish, but it'll stay really, really firm.
Well, when he cooked some up for me the day that we did the interview, I asked him, I said, "Well, what does it taste like?" And he said, "It tastes like tilapia." And I said, "Oh, God," you know, because I hate tilapia. And a lot of people don't know this, but tilapia is a fish that feeds on the waste of animals in the area. And when I had read that, I thought, this is really gross. And that kind of explains to me one of the reasons why tilapia, you can't really hold tilapia for a very long time. It goes bad very quickly. And every time I ended up purchasing some initially when it came out several years ago and became kind of the new wave fish that everybody was using, because it's hardy and because it holds together really well, I had really bad experience with it. You know, you got that ammonia taste and that ammonia smell. And then I was watching a program on the Discovery Channel where tilapia were, you would find them like in the wild, in places like South Africa and what have you, where hippos were. And as the hippos were in the waters and kind of pooping in the waters, the tilapia were feeding off of the waste. And that this really kind of...
We found out we're no different than the tilapia because we're eating beaver crap. we eat our raspberries. So what difference does it make?
I have a different thought on tilapia. My issue with it is not, I don't eat it and I don't serve it, and I haven't for several years. You know, I have eaten it in the past, but I've never served it. And the reason for that is not because of its diet. While I agree that, you know, we all think that's kind of gross, we eat a lot of things that have a diet like that. You know, we eat catfish. Catfish will eat anything that floats in front of them. You know, we eat several different things. My issue with tilapia is the majority of the tilapia that we're seeing is not wild-caught tilapia. This is tilapia that was used to clean, essentially, quote-unquote, clean the tanks on farm-raised salmon and farm-raised catfish and farm-raised fish as a whole. While granted, it has some upsides, I think the carbon footprint of it when you live in an area like Maryland, where we have so much seafood surrounding us, buying farm-raised fish is raising the carbon footprint to such a high level when you get it in that it's not even worth doing. And it also it takes money out of your local economy when you have other fish, like, you know, catfish, for example. Another invasive that we use is caught locally in the Potomac River, and that's the blue catfish. It makes no sense for me to buy farm-raised catfish that's coming from, you know, Montana or something like that, and having it, the high carbon footprint of producing it, the high carbon footprint of it being flown across the country and then put into a tractor trailer and drove somewhere else, when I can just call a fisherman, essentially, who is less than an hour away, who can go out that morning, get it, give me a better shelf life, and also have a lower carbon footprint, which is better for the environment to begin with.
But, Chad,
that's my,
rationale behind
tilapia.
I'll probably make you mad here, but you and I see it a little differently on that, because I have been in the food processing business for many, many years. And I guess I have no problem with natural processing and catching natural fish and habitat, but how do you feed the masses without wiping at species unless you do some type of farming?
Well, there's proper regulation of a species. You know, especially at the blue catfish, if we continue on catfish, it's probably a bad example, but blue catfish, the reason behind that is that's an invasive species. So we want them dead. We want to kill all of them. So who cares? At the end of the day, if we wipe them all out, we wipe them all out. But the simple fact remains is, you know, if you get something that is taking 3 days before it comes to you or 2 days before it comes to you, it's better on a restaurant end to get something that was caught that morning or that afternoon. Sure. You're going to get a fresher product. You're going to get a longer shelf life out of it, which is going to make it more economically viable for a chef in a restaurant to do that, and it's also putting money back into your local economy, which I think is really important when it comes to the food industry. But when you look at other farmed items, you know, salmon we could go to. Salmon they've done so many crazy things with over the years and things that they're doing right now, but what it all boils down to is regulate the fishery. If you regulate the fishery properly through, you know, not necessarily through legislation, but even the watermen can regulate it properly because these guys see on a day-to-day basis the ups and downs that that the fish have. So the Chesapeake Bay, as an example, the Chesapeake Bay, our rockfish is so well maintained. You know, our rockfish is certified by the MSC. Yellow perch is a very well-regulated fishery. And, you know, we get enough to feed the masses. And a lot of the fish that come out of these local regions, you know, spiny dogfish, for example, is one that's around here. No one's ever heard of that here. And the reason is because the millions of pounds that they catch every year, they ship them right over to Europe, and we're having no problem with the population of them. You know, so it's a matter of just educating people about what sustainability means and how you sustain a population of fish, and the proper regulations and the proper means and measures gets people to understand, oh, well, you know what, I can't have rockfish today, I can have a yellow perch today, and you're still essentially getting seafood like you wanted to begin with. You're trying something new, and you're also helping to maintain the populations for future generations.
So you don't have, you yourself don't have a problem with the farming of animals and the actual,
no,
you know, mass marketing. You're more concerned about just using the assets that we have and monitoring and regulating them properly. But you understand you still have to have
I understand it, and I agree with it to an extent, and to some extent I don't. You know, like I said, I'm way, way more for the carbon footprint issues and issues with the environment as a whole. And, you know, that's me, and that's the message that I have. You know, there are some very, very ethical and very responsible farms. You know, Marvesta Shrimp is a great example. You know, I try to serve them. They're a locally farmed shrimp. And, you know, they've even farmed scallops at this point that have been good. And, you know, the scallop fishery is pretty damaging to the ocean in some areas where they're dredging and things like that. So, you know, some of it I think makes perfectly great sense. Some of it I don't think does. And when you look at the way that these demands are created for these things, it's all marketing. You know, there's nothing that could stop the food. If the food industry realizes that we could take, I don't know, some random fish in the ocean and we can make everybody want it, everybody is going to want it just because they're doing it. They don't care about the destruction. They don't care about anything else. And then the farming typically comes after they've already destroyed it. And that's my big issue with it. And, you know, tilapia is a great example of that because out of the blue, tilapia blew up. Tilapia blowing up was a result of salmon farming. And salmon farming was a result of the depletion of the population of salmon in different regions. And to me, the problem starts at the beginning, not at the end.
Right.
That makes sense.
And I think the message here, and we really shouldn't lose the message here, I think the message here, and this is really what's kind of happening, is we really need to focus. I mean, I know the U.S. is a massive amount of land, but I think what we really need to do is we need to kind of push the efforts back into the hands of the local producers within, you know, acceptable regions that are developed, you know, because there's so many states that are landlocked. And, you know, how are these guys going to get fresh seafood? Well, of course, they're going to depend on some of the more coastal areas. But, you know, how can we as a country or we as a population have that created for us or expect that? And really, if you look at things that eventually happen, you know, in the industry, it's because the consumers are demanding it. And I think if we
right.
demand it as a consumer and say, okay, well, perhaps I can have snakehead because it's something that's available, you know, in Maryland, but what is something that's available closer to where you are, and push that food item within that particular region. And that's not something that's unheard of. I mean, you travel, you know, to other countries, and I recently traveled to France, and there were so many unique regional and local cuisines that were, you know, cooked and offered within that area that we were traveling in, and then not in the areas that we weren't traveling in. So, so I think it's a good thing, and I think if it's something that's really unique and delicious, people are going to seek that out, and that's going to help tourism in the area. That's going to help, you know, new business formation, and I, you know, I hope that more local politicians are kind of gearing their thought process more to these kinds of things. But one thing that I recently read about was the new opening of a horse meat processing plant. Did you guys hear about that?
Yeah,
in
in New Mexico, and that's been off and on, off and on, off and on for
mm-hmm.
for years.
Mm-hmm.
And I
mm-hmm.
think now, last we heard, it actually was approved in legislature.
Yes.
Yes,
and there were like
2 or 3
others that were going to be approved. Now that's, you know, I don't know. I kind of have mixed feelings about it, but I know that all of the horse meat that is produced in the United States isn't something that is necessarily sold in the United States. The largest consumer of horse meat is France, and you know, some
right.
other European countries. So it's produced, it's processed here and then shipped abroad. So that is going to be really interesting to see if there are going to be, you know, horse meat farms that are now going to be popping up. Because as of this point, from what I understand, it's just wild horses in order to manage the populations of wild horses that are actually being processed.
Do you guys mind if I touch on this one real quick, too?
Yeah.
Sure.
With this horse thing? I also have mixed feelings about it. I am no way against people eating horse meat, and I am no
mm-hmm.
way against them selling horse meat. I'm not even
mm-hmm.
against them farming horse meat. I'm not
mm-hmm.
against it turning into something that people eat on a regular basis. What I do have a problem with is the fact that we've seen by example what the mass food industry does when they realize how profitable something is that's easy for them to obtain. And
right.
I think it's going to open the door in the United States. I'm not saying that this is going to happen everywhere, but I think it's going to open the door in the United States to widespread abuse of horses. I think it's going to open the door to more meat fraud, which is a huge problem in the seafood market right now. And I think
mm-hmm.
it's going to constantly, all of a sudden, you're not going to know you're eating horse meat when they realize it's cheaper than using beef, and they start mixing horse meat into mass-produced beef. And they already had that problem, and I think it was it Ireland? I think
it was.
Well, they
have
that
in
the United States.
Over in Europe.
They
have
it in the U.S.
Burger King.
I mean, they
just had that
recently with Burger King. And, you know, I don't...
Well,
and that's going to happen here, too. And that's my issue with it, is that they're going to let it run wild, and they're going to continue doing what they're doing right now with pigs and cows and everything else. And then we're just going to end up seeing, you know, like I said, widespread abuse for profit. And, you know, quite frankly, it disgusts me. But at the end of the day, if there's a bunch of responsible and ethical farmers that want to raise horses for slaughter, go right ahead and do it. I think it's appropriate to do. I think there's a market for it. I think people want to eat it. And I think that there is a need to control the population. If there's wild horses running around, eat them.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, Aaron.
And I think that's really...
Aaron, do you have pork farms in Florida?
Yeah, I have one at my house.
Because I was going to say...
Just in case you're wondering.
There's not a whole lot of pork farms in Florida as far as the actual farming goes and the production and killing of pigs. So if we have it their way, you're not going to be able to get your bacon.
I know. And if we have it their way, then I really literally will turn all of my property into a pork farm, and I will make bacon here for all of us.
I'll help you with
it. I won't be able to function without being able to get my hands on bacon.
Well, you know, if you live in Florida, you do have a very, very a very valuable resource down there, because I know that if I'm correct, Florida has a pretty bad feral pig problem right now. And if you look at Texas, what they're doing, start eating the feral pigs. Stop eating the farmed pigs, because they taste better anyway, and they're probably better for you at the end of the day, and they don't, and they're all natural.
Well, here's one of the coolest parts, and one of the things that we do is catching the feral pigs, putting them into a pen and feeding them and raising them. And I mean, it's just one of the things, a thing that a lot of people around here do. So you feed and raise them, and then you butcher it yourself. So it's just one of those things that.
I've been fortunate to have the opportunity to go to Texas and hunt for those on a hay farmer's property. So it's definitely great. It's a great resource to have at this point.
Yeah, it's open hog season all year long down here, so that's always a good thing.
Well, I'm probably gonna come visit you, man.
Guys, what I need to do is I need to take a break, and we do have a sponsor that still likes us, and I need to play one of their ads, and then I'll be right back. I want everybody to hold on. We'll be back in just a couple of seconds. We need to, speaking of barbecuing pigs and the such, we have our sponsor, which is Big Green Egg. And if you guys haven't seen a Big Green Egg yet, you need to check one out, because the Big Green Egg is the hottest thing in barbecue. And everybody hang tight. We've got a little commercial for Big Green Egg. We'll be right back.
I'm Ray Lampe, Dr. Barbecue, and I'm here to tell you about the Big Green Egg, the ultimate cooking experience. The versatility of the Big Green Egg is unmatched as a grill, a smoker, and even an outdoor oven. Sear steaks at 800 degrees, slow smoke a perfect slab of ribs, or even bake a crispy pizza or a pecan pie. That's why I cook on the Big Green Egg, the ultimate cooking experience.
Yes, and check out Big Green Egg. You can go to biggreenegg.com. You can find yourself one of the dealers near you. All you have to do is plug in your zip code, and you'll find a dealer near you. They're all over the country. And check out the Big Green Egg, because there's nothing like grilling or smoking or cooking on a Big Green Egg, so get yourself one. And we are back here on the Green Ideas Radio Show, and we're talking about sustainability and farming and all the pros and cons that go along with that. We have Chef Chad Wells with us. We have Katarina Borg. We have Laurie, our food news girl. We have Aaron in Florida. And, guys, I wanted to come back and chat a little bit more before we bring on our next guest about the farming things we had talked about earlier. And, of course, I'm kind of a big farm guy, so, Chad, don't shoot me, but I do see where you're coming from, where there needs to be more sustainability and more monitoring and regulations. But there are a lot of companies out there who do follow the rules, and if it wasn't for them, we wouldn't have the safe food that we have today. There are a lot of bad apples also. So I guess where I get a little, not irritated is the right word, upset with some people is when they give a swapping review of the food industry. And there's some good companies that are out there that are doing their part and making it so Americans have good food to eat, good safe food to eat. But there are a few out there who don't do what they're supposed to do. So from that perspective, that's where I come from. If it wasn't for America feeding the world, it'd be a lot worse place.
Well, I don't have a problem with farming on a mass scale. What I have a problem with is that the way that this industry is functioning. You know, the food industry in this country is broken, and there's no denying that. I mean, it's to a point now to where, you know, the majority of antibiotics in this country are owned by pig farmers and cow farmers. Cows are now eating grass. Cows aren't supposed to eat
chicken
grass.
Too.
Cows are eating corn. Yeah, cows are eating corn. They're not supposed to eat corn. They're supposed to eat grass. You know, and now it's shifted to where it's kind of controlling and encompassing everything. And now there's government subsidies being given to these massive corporations. And, you know, I'm not going to get into the political talk about it, because there's a lot of that behind it. But, you know, there could be a guy who, you know, started a family farm that's huge now, and he's doing the right thing, and he's raising his animals naturally, and he's not trying to speed up the process and, you know, get a cow to the weight of a 5-year-old cow by the time it's 6 months old so that he can kill it and process it and make more money off of it at the expense of the consumer. And I constantly relate the food industry right now, the mass food industry, and I'm not referring to just a big farmer, but you know, I'm talking about, I won't say any company names to hurt you, but you know, the mass pig farms or some of these companies, the things that they're doing right now, I think are completely inappropriate. And you know, it's if you and I, you know, if if I could stand there and fire a bullet at somebody, and every bullet I fired, I made more money than the bullet before, at the end of the day, I'm going to jail for murder, no matter how much money I make, because I know that that bullet is going to kill somebody. And some of the things that these companies are doing right now is that exact same thing. Every time you take a bite, they're making more money. And every time you take a bite, you're slowly dying from some of the things that they put in these things, and there's no accountability whatsoever.
That's absolutely
And the tobacco industry is the biggest example of what happens when they start infiltrating the government and letting them decide what they can do with their own business. And that's what's happening in the food industry, and it's huge. And it's so widespread that I firmly believe that the mass food industry in this country is by design going to kill us all. And it's eventually going to happen. I mean, you know, we're watching the obesity rates rise to levels that are unheard of in any other country in the world. And this is happening because of things we consume. You know, we consume things in this country that are illegal to consume in other countries. They're illegal to consume or sell. You know, and I don't believe that the government has any right to tell you what you can and can't consume, but I do believe that the government has a right to at least say to companies, like, hey, this kills people. You have to tell them that this kills people. This gives you a high risk of cancer. You have to tell them. And that's exactly what the tobacco industry did with no accountability. They went rampant, and they went crazy trying to sell a low-priced product, and they targeted poor people and children, just as the food industry does. And they targeted poor people, they targeted children. And then at the end of the day, you got all these people hooked on cigarettes that they knew were going to be addicted to cigarettes. They knew the harm, and then they just didn't tell anybody about it. And that's what my problem is. If you want to eat something that could potentially give you cancer, cool, go ahead. That's fine. But the fact is, at the end of the day, I want to know about it before I consume
it. The tobacco industry is a whole other story, but the tobacco industry, the reason they became so pervasive and so popular was because they glamorized it. I mean, if you think back to, I'm a huge old movie buff, and when I look at all these old movies, what's the first thing that all of these celebrities do? They light up. And so that was how they got their message out. You want to be cool, you want to be like this one or that one, light up a cigarette. And it's a very addictive product. You know, you get people started on it, and before you know it, they're hooked. So, you know, it's very interesting marketing ploy, and I think...
In my opinion, the tobacco industry is completely different than the food industry. Tobacco, we all know, is pumping nicotine into the tobacco to make it more... habit forming, and yes, it was glamorized, but also people became more educated over the years about it, and of course smoking now has on a big drop because people know more about it. And I agree with Chad.
Right.
I think it took
about 40 to 45 years though. I mean, it didn't happen quickly because I think the same is happening with food. You know,
I think the nail on the head with education though. I think that that people became educated about tobacco because tobacco industry got exposed. That didn't happen because the tobacco industry decided they were going to tell people, hey, guess what, you're going to die.
That's why
I'm relating the food industry to the tobacco industry, is because right now some of the food industry needs to be exposed. They do put additives in food that can kill you. They do put additives in food to make you feel like you're more hungry, that you're not hungry anymore. They do put things in food that is addictive. And, you know, we could run through a list of ingredients that they do this to. But the fact is, they have not been exposed to the level. But I think right now there's kind of this mass awakening from the public that is actually, they're actually saying, hey, I don't want this. And the problem is right now is the food industry has so much power that they're actually fighting back. And then, you know, they're getting legislations that protect them from lawsuits, that protect them from these things. And they use the tobacco industry as an example, because we all saw when, you know, Peter Angelos, prime example, the owner of the Baltimore Orioles, sued the tobacco industry and won. And they're not going to let that happen to the food industry, because now the food industry has literally bribed and paid off the government in the form of campaign financing. And then now they're appointed to high-level positions all throughout the government. We're not going to stop this unless that portion of the industry is exposed. I think that I don't have a problem with somebody doing these things and eating these things at all. I don't care if you want to go on the corner and shoot heroin. But at the end of the day, I want to know if it's there before I do it. And that's where the problem lies.
The food industry and tobacco industry are not that much different.
I mean, Krispy Kreme has been putting crack in their donuts for years.
Yeah.
It's just the simple fact of the matter is that we only want to know about the bad stuff whenever it's really bad stuff. I don't want to know that they're putting crack in their donuts. I just want to know that they're delicious when I eat them.
Well, this, you know, I think that the thing is that, you know, we have to always put things into perspective. And, you know, even though it is a completely different industry, you can draw parallels in the sense that, you know, it took a long time for it to really come to the forefront where people actually knew. But people still know that cigarette smoking is bad for you, and they still do it. I mean, I still know a lot of smokers myself.
I'm a smoker. I mean,
you know,
I don't think it's a problem with people doing it. I think it's a problem of people not being aware of what they're doing.
Right.
Is the biggest,
right.
the biggest concern.
And I, Chad, came from the food processing business and spent 5 years in the chicken processing. And I agree with you. There are things that happen that need to be, that the consumers need to be educated. But I also believe that not everything you hear is correct when they come out with videos. What was that video called? Food Inc., I believe. They sort of gave it like the evil empire. It was almost Star Wars. And that's the kind of stuff that, as long as it's educated properly on both sides of the issue and then let people make the rational decision.
I firmly agree with that. I do my own research, and I firmly agree with that. I think that there's a lot of things that are just complete propaganda from the other side.
Yes.
And,
mm-hmm.
you know, it goes
mm-hmm.
both ways. And,
that's
you know,
right.
I try to do my own research as to what a particular additive can do to me and what a particular additive could do to my guests and my restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
And I choose,
mm-hmm.
you know, my choice is to not serve these things. You know, and you know, hey, we all go to McDonald's from time and time again. You know, life is going to happen. But the fact is, when you're doing these things on a regular basis, a lot of the problems that we have related to health in this country can be directly related back to the food industry on
That's
so
right.
many levels right now.
That's right.
And,
That's right.
you know, they talk about obesity being such a crisis in this country. Educate people on how not to be obese. I understand
mm-hmm.
there's a medical aspect to some of it, but the majority of it is just people, you know, we've created a system in this country, even with at a restaurant, when people don't leave with 18 doggy bags worth of food, they feel like they're dissatisfied because their portions weren't big enough. You know,
right.
when you go look at the portion size of another country, it's not the same as it is here. You know, and hey, I'm all for it. If you want to eat an 18-pound steak, awesome, because I want to do it with you. But, you know,
well,
at the end of the day...
I can speak from experience there. That's the mm-hmm. absolute truth. I mean, spending 2 weeks in France and traveling from the south to the north, I will vouch that, you know, I ate at so many different restaurants and so many different other venues, and the portions are much smaller, but the food is prepared in a completely different way, where you eat it and you are so full. Because it's still whole food. It's not processed in any way. And I think if we continue to insist on the best quality food that we can source within our communities, that it's going to be there for us. But we,
hey,
as
but
consumers,
Katarina, don't the French, don't
need
the
to
French
get that
smoke
going.
A lot? Don't the French smoke a lot?
Well, I think all Europeans do. I think that's just
well,
kind
okay.
of a given.
Well, so, okay.
You know?
Here's what it boils down to. We're all correct. Chad is right. I'm right. And even Aaron's right with his crack in the donuts. It all boils down to education, and also people have to either be smart or stupid. And when they eat,
yeah.
They smoke, or what they put in their mouth. So it all boils down to education. And I agree, there needs to be open communication. But shoot, the same thing goes on in the auto industry. The same thing goes on in the banking industry. You name it.
Well, but
drugs,
you know what happens.
Drugs to the pharmaceutical,
but you know what
it's
happens.
All, it's all done the same way.
But you know what happens? Chad kind of touched on this before when he was talking about tilapia, where all of a sudden you had this new product that was out on the market, and everybody heard all the buzz. You've got these really great marketing companies that are out there to put all this buzz out there, and everybody, without even doing their own, you know, little checking out, just jumped on it because they heard this
right.
one talking about it, or this one is really good. And, you know, I think we need to take more responsibility for what we do and how we live our lives, and do a little bit more research. Take a little bit more charge over our, you know, healthcare, and you know, really seek out the things that you know we want to incorporate in our lives. And one of the things that was kind of on the same page was coconut water. I just recently did an article on coconut water, and coconut water exploded on the scene a couple of years ago and has made numerous companies bazillionaires. And,
right.
I mean, a company like Coke isn't going to get into coconut water unless they see, you know, a financial, significant financial reward. And
right.
You know, they recently came out with their own product called Zyco. But, you know, I encourage everybody to read that article because, yes, there are benefits, but there are also drawbacks. And the drawbacks are that coconut water is it's a calorie drink. It's not like you're drinking regular water, and that's the way really that it's presented. And I think with many of the people that I am friends with on Facebook who you know, sometimes I think should really know better and present the information better. They don't. They promote things and encourage their readers and their followers, you know, to follow suit instead of saying, well, gee, here are the pros, here are the cons, you make the best decision for you, instead of throwing out all these pros that they believe are pros. Without
because
really
everybody
kind of
has an agenda, and that's what it's all about. Everybody's always looking out for number one, and that's why people do this. You know, we have an agenda for our show, and you have an agenda for your website.
Well, but these
and
are
Dan
people. These are people who aren't getting paid. But these are people who are not getting paid for the promotion of a product.
It goes back to what I said: stupid people. Stupid is and stupid does.
Well,
you know,
still,
if,
you know, I
if
just,
I could
it. Go ahead.
I was going to say, if I could touch on what you said about, you know, the banks doing it, the auto industry doing it, I agree with
right.
that completely, and this is the one thing that makes it very scary and different with the food industry. Having a car is not a basic necessity and need of life. Having food is. If you don't eat, you will die. We all know that. It doesn't take a scientist to say if you don't eat, you're going to die from not eating. But the fact is, they're taking things, and granted, we all know in the food industry there's luxury items, you know, but the fact is, at the end of the day, you have to eat or you're going to die. And they're, so this industry now, they know it as well as we all do, that if you don't eat, you're dead. So they do all this stuff, they put all this stuff in your food, and you don't have a choice. And what I keep saying about they target poor people with this is the dirtiest companies, the dirtiest people of the in this industry, they receive kickbacks and money from people being poor in the form of food stamps and a SNAP program and things of that nature. They're very important things that people in this country need. There's a lot of people impoverished in the United States, and when they receive food stamps or they receive WIC checks to feed their kids, they start at such a young age with this now that the same companies that get the paybacks from using these, they tell you what products you can and can't get with it, and
right.
then they push the products of these, what I just outright say, nasty, evil corporations. They push those products on people, and they push them on them so that way they can still continue to profit even off of poor people. And I think it's, I just think it's very, very, very corrupt and very disgusting. But guys, as much as I've appreciated it being on here, and
yes.
I hope you'll have me back, I got to run and start doing some stuff for lunch.
Yes,
I got
Chad,
a party coming in here
you.
Shortly.
We got to take a break, and I tell you what, Chad, I want to go catfishing and snakehead fishing with you sometime in the near future.
Hey, buddy, anytime. And Aaron, I'm coming down to Florida to shoot some feral pigs.
Yeah, bring it, man.
Yeah, let's do it. All right, it's been a pleasure.
All right,
I'll talk to you all soon. Thank
you.
Bye.
Thank you, Chad.
All
right, everybody, and we're going to take a brief break. Our next guest, Saber Ricci, is going to be joining us. Katarina, thank you for joining us today and exhausting me on a very hot topic and exhausting topic. We appreciate you joining us today, and thank you for your input. And Aaron, hang tight. I don't need you to stay on here. Don't go anywhere. We're going to be talking about star sign cooking. Oh, you leave a cat? No, you stay here. All right, everybody, I'm going to play a little break song here. Let's see. Let's go with the barbecue song, and since we're talking about those evil monsters out there who produce barbecue, and we'll be right back.
The first thing I did enjoy was a plate of barbecue. Barbecue, sliced beef and bread, ribs and sausage and a cold big red. Barbecue makes old ones be young. Barbecue makes everybody someone. If you're feeling puny, you don't know what to do, treat yourself to some meat. Eat some barbecue. Now there was once this girl I knew. She treated me so mean. I offered her my barbecue. She licked my platter clean. Barbecue, sliced beef and bread, ribs and sausage and a cold big red. Barbecue makes old ones be young. Barbecue makes everybody someone. If you're feeling puny, you don't know what to do, treat yourself to some meat. Eat some barbecue. Now don't give me no broccoli or any Swiss fondue. Baby, if you want to rock me, barbecue, sliced beef and bread, ribs and sausage and that cold big bread. Barbecue makes old ones be young. Barbecue makes everybody someone. If you're feeling puny, you don't know what to do, drink some fancy some meat, eat some barbecue.
Missing that extra zing? Do you need a radio commercial? If you answered yes to any of these questions, then I can help you. Hello, I'm Christopher Trimble, and I am a voiceover artist. I offer these great services: website intros, corporate presentations, audiobooks, radio commercials, and much, much more. Check out my site, www.christophertrimble.com, or you can call 407-556-5506. Once again, that phone number is 407-556-5506. Making noise since 1970.
And we are back at the Green Ideas Radio Show with me, Green Ideas, and my sidekick, A.A. Ron Aaron. And Aaron, I feel like I just need to go out and eat a carrot after that whole first segment.
I agree. I don't know if it's a carrot that I need, or if I want to go eat as many GMOs as I can get my hand on. not quite sure which direction I want to go.
Oh my God, I'm exhausted. And no, they make good points, but it all boils down to education. No matter what your issues are with Big Farm or GMOs or what have you, I could argue probably both ways just as well as anybody, but it all boils down to education, and we all have to make choices based on what we want to eat. If you want to, and I think Chad agreed with us too, if you want to eat a big old slimy steak or a pound of bacon, have at it. It's your choice, and there's nothing wrong with knowing what's in it and what it's all about.
You should just know what's in it or where it came from. I mean, making a choice on eating something like that, you should have the opportunity to make that choice on educated information. And that's what I think his big thing is just he doesn't care what you eat or where you eat it from. And again, like he's not against eating horse meat. I'm not either. There's nothing I'm against eating. It's just the fact that I should know where it's at and what it's come from, you know?
Yes, my grandfather told me a long time ago the reason why he didn't eat horse meat because it gave him the trots. I never knew what it meant, but anyway. on the next segment here, we're running out of time and cutting into our next guest appearance here as our good friend, the celebrity to the stars, Saber Ricci, is joining us this morning, and I'm going to press this button and hopefully everything will work. Good morning, Saber. Welcome to the show.
Good morning. I feel a little, wow, those were some hot topics this morning.
Whoa,
I feel a little frivolous coming in at this point talking about such, you know, silly things.
No, please lighten the mood. We need to know what we eat based on the stars because I'm just so tired right now. I need some good news.
Some good news. Okay. Well, I'm going to talk about the sign of Cancer this morning.
Oh, God. You're going to talk about Cancer too?
We've gone.
Not that kind of Cancer. The sun sign Cancer. The sun's in Cancer right now. So I want to give a little shout out to all the Cancers that have their birthday this month and talk to them about actually we're going to talk about foods that if you're trying to woo a Cancer would be suitable. And I've got three good.
I need everyone to pay attention to this segment and send me all the foods they can send.
Well, Cancer is ruled by the moon. And, you know, I always talk about the body part that this sign rules, which happens to be the stomach. So I'm going to talk about three recipes from my book, Sexy Star Sign Cooking, that are great for not only wooing a Cancer, but are nice stomach soothers as well. And I'm going to start out I'm going to post the sizzling shrimp recipe on your site later. Sizzling shrimp cakes with sweet chili sauce and papaya butter.
Oh my God.
Now, wait a minute. Wait. Are they farm-raised shrimp or are they natural shrimp?
Farm-raised shrimp. Well, that's a good question. As you were talking, you know, saying before, I mean, that's a choice we all have to make. So,
yeah.
You know, it depends on where you're at in the world and, you know, who your purveyors are. You know, that's a good question. But the theory is that, and legends surrounding shrimp, when it comes to romance, are that, you know, in the Caribbean, they believe that eating shrimp while involved in a little making whoopee doubles the pleasure.
Whoa.
Saber,
I haven't heard making whoopee since I think Laugh-In was on in like the 70s or 60s.
Well, I don't know who your audience is this morning, so I thought I'd play it safe. Oh, boy. But these the shrimp in these shrimp cake is really, this is one of my favorite recipes. I love this. This is so good. And then the papaya butter. So I thought that I'd post this recipe later, but I'll let you boys make the choice after I tell you the rest of them. The other one that I was going to talk about is, I know we don't have much time, is this is a rise and shine. This is a morning juice to get, you know, like if you if you're a morning person.
Right.
This is called the Rise and Shine Beet Ginger and Grapefruit Juice. And
Hey, Aaron.
Okay. I love you. It's not only
tasty, but just carrying this to a loved one, I mean, the color, as you can imagine, is quite brilliant. And anyway, you don't have to be a Cancer, and you don't have to be trying to get anyone in the mood for this one. I love this juice with ruby red grapefruits, beet, and fresh ginger, and you juice it. And and I will tell you that, you know, I mean, ginger has all long been touted as a aphrodisiac. I'm sure you're aware of that, dating back
right
to the Kama Sutra. So that
I always liked her on Gilligan's Island too.
Who? Oh, ginger. Okay. I know. Well, who didn't like ginger? She was like, she, poor Mary Ann, you know, how did you even compare to, how do you even stand up to someone like Ginger, you know?
It's like, actually, Mary Ann would have been a lot more fun than Ginger. I think I would have gone with Mary Ann more. I think about it now.
Yeah, Ginger was a little high maintenance, huh?
Yes.
But anyway, as I was saying, you know, that ginger is notated in the Kama Sutra as being a powerful aphrodisiac. And, you know, just the scent and flavor kind of assail the senses and can cause arousal. So if you want to get someone in the mood, you might try the Rise and Shine Beet and Ginger juice from my book, Sexy Star Sign Cooking.
Nothing says good morning like a ginger and beet juice.
I just feel like really silly after your conversation. I was like listening in. I was just like, wow, oh my gosh, like how can I come on the show now and talk about, you know, sexy star sign cooking?
Oh, no, it's perfect. Believe it's perfect. It's like, you're like the dessert after a real heavy meal.
The dessert, okay. Well, and then my next, the next recipe that is fabulous for cancers is the Yukon Gold Mashed Potatoes with Blue Cheese, Baby Filet Mignons, and with a Burgundy Wine Sauce. So I thought you guys, knowing the meat lovers that you are, and this is kind of funny because who knew, like Yukon potatoes, you know, Yukon Golds, that in early England potatoes were deemed the apples of love, which
Yukon potatoes?
Yeah,
really?
Which pretty much explains why they thought of them as mood enhancing. So, you know, that's why they made it into my book.
Well, they all sound good, but I have to tell you, you said we have to make a choice. My choice, I don't know what Aaron's choice is, but my choice has got to be your first recipe, the one with the shrimp that doubles your chances of whoopee or whatever you said. That's my choice. What about you, Aaron?
Hands down, the shrimp is the only way to go.
All right.
I now, as much like I make a ginger lemonade, which is great, but I'm not making beet juice lemonade and drinking that. I'm not doing it.
You guys would be really surprised. I'm serious. It's seriously so delicious. I mean, do you like chilled, like fresh ruby red grapefruit juice, because the beet is so, you know, mild. You only use like a half a beet, and it just adds this brilliant color. And not, you know, the grapefruit juices and the ginger are the prevailing flavors. So you really, that beet just like kind of, you know, beet has, you know, been used, you know, for centuries as a dye. So just think of it as a.
Well, you know, he's
my problem is. No, don't even go there, because you're going to talk about yama beet pudding.
Yama beet pudding. That's why he doesn't like beets.
Oh,
no,
really?
I don't like beets because if I wanted to make something taste like dirt, I could go scoop up a pile of dirt outside and put it in my food.
You know what? That is like, I just, when was the last time you ate a beet, Aaron? Because you know what? I served a client the other day who told me, I don't like beets. And I did a roasted beet salad for her with, I mean, some other ingredients. And she was just like, wow, I've never had a beet taste so good. I have always said the same exact thing, the whole, you know, that beets always tasted like dirt to her. So maybe you should give it a try. Maybe you just, you know, had a bad experience with a beet.
No. The problem is, I think that lady was like me. I don't think she could be brutally honest with you. You went through the trouble of making her a beet salad.
No. This lady would definitely tell me if she didn't like something. She has no problem telling me if she doesn't like something. So I beg to differ. Sorry.
Well,
we're
going to have to try it. now I got to have the recipe because I'm going to personally make some beet juice for Aaron, because we need to make sure that we change his feeling about the good old beet.
Yeah. No, really, though, when was the last time you had a beet, Aaron? Beets have come a long way. Oh, really? Oh, so you've had it recently.
Fairly.
And that was in this pudding that you were talking about?
No. I just ate a piece of pickled dirt, and that's what it was. Pickled sand.
You can't fix him. Move along. So.
All right.
We'll just have to
agree to disagree.
I choose the shrimp. Now, because we're running short on time, I have to ask you a couple questions.
Sure.
First of all, what's the latest with the chocolate line?
Oh.
Oh, okay. Next question. How's the book doing?
The book is doing great, and the other questions, just like I can't talk about it right now. So, but we'll talk about it another time. But the book is doing great, and I'm going to be starting my own YouTube channel in the next couple weeks. Yeah, so I'm going to be doing a weekly post, where I'll talk about the book, and it'll be a little more astrology based. I'll be doing interviews with people, talking about their charts. It'll be really interesting. It'll be pretty intimate, just me and the camera talking to you. Sometimes I'll have guests, sometimes I won't. But anyway, I'm really excited about that, and I'll keep you posted on everything else. You're going to have to be a guest on my show, though, you guys, one of these times. So,
definitely.
You won't be able to hide behind the airwaves. You're going to have to, like, show up.
Now, when are you starting the show? You're starting it next month?
Well, I have an appointment later this afternoon with the producer that's helping me set the whole thing up. So we're hoping to get something out next week. So and start, but I, you know, I don't want to be premature about it. But So I'll keep you posted.
Can they find that on your website, saberisi.com?
Yes, they can. My Facebook, Twitter, you know, all the usual suspects. So, I'll keep you posted and hopefully be back next month to share more.
Well, thank you very much. I know our time is short, and we cut into your time this morning, but appreciate you coming on and telling us about the sexy desserts. And send me privately that beet dessert, because I think we need to convince Aaron that he needs to try it out. And you're welcome next month. Next month, see, what's next month's? This month was cancer. Who's next month?
Leo.
There's lots of Leos out there. So next month you'll be talking about Leos, and I'm weird
because I'm the middle of the two.
Are really? You right on the cusp? What's your birthday? The
22nd? 19th.
The 19th. Okay. So you probably have some planets in Leo too. Yeah, you must have more Leo. That's why you're so fixed on not liking beets.
I knew there was going to be a reason.
All right, guys. It was fun as usual, and I'll look forward to talking to you next month, and have a wonderful weekend.
All right, you too. Thanks for joining us.
All right. Thanks. Bye-bye.
All right, bye. There you go. Check out SaberRichie.com. Check out her new video series. Sounds like it'd be interesting, and looking forward to that. And, Aaron, I forgot to ask you, 4th of July just went past, and did you do anything special for the 4th of July?
Yep. I sat in front of my TV and did absolutely nothing.
Well, that's special. Actually, that is
special. It was very special.
Actually, I did the same exact thing, so two peas in a pod on that one. And
yeah.
On that note, we're going to call it a day. We've blown through the hour and a half. Thank you, everyone, for joining us for another fun-packed food frenzy on the Green Ideas Radio Show. And join us again next Saturday morning when we have more guests and talking about food and stuff like that. And, Aaron, enjoy the rest of your weekend. And I'm going to play, I think we ought to play a Brian Mack song. Let's see, smiles all around. Everyone have smiles all around this weekend, and we'll see you next Saturday.